Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Rushit Shah, and I'm also Regional Director at Elcott Global, responsible for executive search and consulting business in Asia Pacific. Our mission is to connect the tech in supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem globally by bringing forward some of the interesting stories about success and failures from leaders in industry. Today, we have James Chinmuri from Sendo. I mean, I was quite excited about this podcast because, you know, sustainability is my current topic of interest. And Sendo is the only company which is 100% carbon neutral when it comes to delivery services within Australia and US. So James, welcome.
Great to be here, Rashid.
Well, you know, so for everybody to know, James is the founder and the CEO of Sendo. And James, if you, you know, if you don't mind kind of giving us a quick background on how did you end up at Sendo? And, you know, because I know that, you know, you're not in a tech or a supply chain or a freight forwarding company before. So,
yeah, my background, I'm originally a satellite engineer, an electrical engineer who worked for the Australian government building the first Australian satellite in 30 years. So definitely nothing to do with e-commerce or logistics. And funnily enough, you mentioned the World Economic Forum. I did my PhD in innovation theory. And for a while was the co-chair of the World Economics Global Future Council on the digital economy and society. So that was James as a complete nerd. But in 2013, I actually finished my time at the National Research Agency in Australia, took some time off and actually agreed to become the primary carer of our two young boys so my wife could go back and pursue her executive career. And I signed up to do that for 5 years. So, and my big realization at the time was that I really wanted to go back and build something that had a positive impact on the world. And so the first business, and again, it didn't even start out in supply chain originally, it was actually a marketplace, and it was a marketplace for giving. You might imagine I had two young boys and huge numbers of baby clothes that they were quickly growing out of. And so the original business was, how do I find another owner? Yeah, how do we find another? And in fact, I was happy to give stuff away if I could just find somebody who could use it and who wanted it. And so we turned our mind to, you know, how could you remove all the friction from the process of reuse? And, you know, that quickly moved us and to the, you know, interesting thing is the hardest thing about reuse is actually getting the items from one person to another. And of course, this is where we started our logistics. So we created a marketplace. It was a giving marketplace because that was the simplest way of reusing items. But we decided to see if we could power it through a really frictionless and convenient logistics service. Not knowing, of course, and the marketplace grew to like 50,000 people really quickly. But we didn't know that we'd chosen perhaps the worst possible use case. Because if you think about it, it was one thing at a time. Everything had to be very, very affordable. It all had to be door-to-door. Because if you had to have someone line up at the post office, they'd stop giving things away. And it had to be built for a customer who was completely not sophisticated, you might say, around, you know, logistics. It wasn't, you know, sending parcels and looking at network optimization as their day job, right? They really were just trying to give something away. And so we were faced with this really difficult set of things that we had to meet, you know, affordable minimum order quantity one, affordable one-off door-to-door logistics service that were built for everyday consumers. And what we found was that the solution to that wasn't, I mean, of course, we talked to the post office, the, you know, Australia Post at the time, but they wanted everyone to line up at the post office. The solution actually lay in a lot of enterprise carriers. In fact, in regional carriers, folk who would be delivering stuff to people's homes and the trucks would go back empty. And we pretty much said to them, well, look, you know, if we can help you fill the trucks, but if we do all the customer support, all the billing collection, all the, you know, the onboarding to make sure the parcels are ready to go, in exchange, could you charge us marginal rates because we're effectively filling the trucks? And there's one, then another one, all started to come on board until we actually built out a national network in Australia for our own purposes. So that was, it was all going very well. And then suddenly some customers actually started to not use us just for giving things away. In fact, it was eBay sellers, and we're very grateful to eBay, and they're now a very deep partner of ours. It was eBay sellers who would actually go and they'd sell on eBay, and then they'd pretend to give the item to the same person, right? Like it would always, and it was like, why they do it? It was because we were more than 50% cheaper than lining up at the post office, and we'd pick it up from their door and send it. And that was enough to basically go through all that additional other thing of like pretending to give away an item that they'd just sold. And that was the moment when we realized, well, actually what we built unwittingly, because we've been so focused on, you know, trying to make it super easy, it just, these folk who were giving away things looked very much like small business, you know, very small e-commerce businesses, and, you know, who might sell two or three or four things at a time. And what we had was a solution that was cheaper, more convenient, generally faster. And actually, because from day one, we decided to offset and make sure that we were, you know, the impact we had was more sustainable as well. So we had a solution, cheaper, faster, more convenient, more sustainable. And that was when we realized, well, maybe our purpose wasn't just to be a marketplace, but maybe it would be to empower all the marketplaces and all of those small businesses out there and level the playing field for them, because they were the ones who are spending much more on shipping than they should have, as we identified ourselves. And that was the moment when we became Sendal. That's the moment we actually became a shipping company.
And 9 years from that, what's the scale and scope of the business? Because now I know now you're in Australia, now it's United States. So how did you end up becoming so big?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. The first month we actually doubled in volume after, you know, and then the second one we doubled again. And so a lot of it came through word of mouth. For example, in America, we're a shipping company with an NPS of 68, right? So we actually have an NPS that's better than Disney and Netflix right now. And as a shipping company, and, you know, most of the rest of the market is either in the negatives or some of them managed to get to the 20s. And that's because we're so focused on the needs of those customers, right? We sort of have a general rule, which is you can either be 80% good to everyone, which is where most couriers have to, you know, national couriers have to be. They're trying to serve all the market, or you can be 100% good to someone. And we've chosen to be 100% good to the needs of the small businesses. And so, yeah, really, we grew initially through a huge amount of word of mouth. But now we're partnered with some amazing companies. For example, eBay, they used to just sell Australia Post labels. Now they're Australia Post and Sendal labels on their platform in Australia and so on. We estimate we do somewhere around 3-5% of Australia's small business shipping now, for example. And then in 2019, we actually decided to come to the US as well, because we saw the same challenge in the US, which is that small businesses basically paying much more than they should and getting a lot less than they deserve.
And do you do any cross borders, or right now it's just within countries?
From Australia, we can send anywhere in the world. And in the US, I won't have my team get me in trouble, but I'd say watch this space.
So how did you end up reaching the 100%? I mean, that's a big say, right? 100% carbon neutral delivery service. Mm-hmm. So how did that happen? And is this just in Australia, or did you achieve that in US as well?
Yes, every parcel we've ever sent has been 100% carbon neutral. And really, I mean, in some ways, we're very lucky, because by doing it from day one, you can build it into the model. You know, we built it into, you know, every single delivery. And the way we achieve it is, firstly, you know, we're very clear around the sort of routes. It's very fortunate that in shipping, generally, the more efficient the route from a carbon perspective, the more affordable the route, if that makes sense. If you can, you know, putting things on more direct, or, you know, less air, or whatever it might be, you can actually optimize the network. And also we have the advantage that, again, the more affordable option is often the one that is more efficient. In other words, filling trucks that are not completely full. So firstly, we look at, you know, what can we do to create a more efficient network? But then what we do is we look at the actual cost, the carbon impact of the deliveries, and we go through a third party to make sure that, you know, we're getting this bit right. And then we offset. And the cool thing about being 100% carbon neutral, in other words, every single delivery, is that we actually let our customers choose where they would like their offsets to go. So our customers actually get to vote every year on, you know, they like to support rainforest in the south of Australia, or would you like to support habitat the Pacific Northwest, or whatever it might be. And so yes, we better work with our customers. More recently, we've actually, because we're now at the scale where we can start to have even more impact, we've been working with some of our suppliers and actually working with them to convert some of their fleet. So, for example, one of our first mile pickup providers in Australia has actually moved to electric vehicles, where they're generating solar energy on the roof of their depot in order to charge those vehicles. And the cool thing around that is it's actually starting to de-risk them against fuel surcharge, for example. So yeah, we really look at all the different facets. And for us, the other thing that's really important, though, is we line it all up. We don't want to be just the only 100% carbon neutral carrier, national carrier in Australia and America. We also want to be the most affordable national carrier in Australia and America, right? And so when we look at that, and this is what we do, we basically say, in shipping, you really focus on this part of the problem. You can actually get benefits in both price and sustainability.
Do you think if you charge a little bit higher and talk to your customers, I mean, this is, I know it's individual customers, so it's hard to generalize, but they would pay because you're doing a carbon neutralization?
I don't know, because we've never done that. In fact, when we started, although it's interesting, my philosophy is if you want lasting change, and, you know, like we're seeing at the moment, we're seeing heat waves in Europe, right? If you want truly lasting change, you try to get rid of the trade-off. You know, it's very important, I think, that if you start, and this is where you, in some ways, in the early days, we were just carbon neutral. We never talked about it, because what we found is that if we talked about it, to begin with, customers actually not choose us because they naturally assumed we would be more expensive, right? And so in the early days, we would just talk about, hey, you know, we're simple, reliable, and affordable. Everything was about simple, reliable, and affordable for the needs of small business. And it still is. We are here 100% built for the needs of small business. And we didn't even talk about being, you know, carbon neutral or anything. Might have told you a bit later on, but it would be generally in the context of, hey, you can talk about being carbon neutral if you would like to, and if you would like it to use it to help retain your customers. It was your choice. We, in the early days, definitely, unfortunately, the carbon neutral space or the sustainable space had been associated with a luxury, right? It had been associated with the idea that at the end of the flight booking, you pay extra to offset your flight. We're quite different. You know, we're actually cheaper and more sustainable. And for me, that's the way you create the lasting change.
But do you kind of show them how much of carbon they are burning off by sending this pickup and getting the product delivered?
We can. It depends on, you know, what. So generally, we'll talk in terms of, you know, how many kilometers of carbon neutral delivery have you actually offset, because we find that's because that's something you can get your arms around a lot more, you know, because what does carbon actually mean, which is the thing. I mean, as a business, just to give you a sense, you know, we've actually offset and you know, I'm still a total space nerd, if that, you know, I still like to try to think in terms of all of these, you know, different ways of doing it. But if you actually look at what we offset, it's around 30 billion kilometers of carbon neutral delivery, right? And we've actually gone further than Voyager now, which is very fun.
Let's do this, you know, because I'm quite sure many of my audience might not really understand what carbon neutralization is or what carbon net zero is. We should go a little bit away from Sindhu for a minute and talk about what does that mean? Because, you know, I'm assuming many of them might think that, you know, carbon neutralization means that, you know, they're just using solar and electric, which is not true. What you mean is that, what does it really mean is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you try your best to reduce the fuel you use, but where you can't use it because it's essential, you go and, you know, invest or grow a plant somewhere in this world, which basically makes sure that, you know, the carbon you're using, you're kind of giving it back. Tell me if I'm wrong, James, and if you want to add something on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, there's different degrees of this, but first you look at carbon intensity. You say, what's the carbon intensity of your operation? And what do you include in scope of that carbon intensity? So they've got what they call scope one emissions, which is when you're burning fuel yourself or burning something or generating carbon yourself. Scope two is when you're paying somebody to burn the carbon. So, for example, you'll pay your electricity company to burn carbon, or you'll pay your driver to burn carbon. Scope three is when you actually start looking at other things. You know, you could even go so far as to look at the carbon dioxide that I am emitting right now when I breathe. That's, you know, to the very end. And so, you know, you can, when you start looking at it, you start saying, well, it's absolutely scope one, scope two, and probably some limited scope three. And that's how you, and then there's global protocols, for example, the Global Logistics Environment Council. There's, you know, there's different ways which will tell you what are good established methods that you can use to actually measure, you know, to make the decisions around what to include in scope, how to measure it, and so on. But once you've done all that and you've worked out your carbon intensity, you can then say, how do I reduce my carbon intensity? But everything else, yes, we commit to basically taking it, you know, for every kilogram of carbon we produce through a delivery, we take a kilogram of carbon back out of the air. And again, there's the way you do that. We work with a company called South Pole. We make sure that the carbon dioxide that we're, you know, is actually removing carbon dioxide. There's a whole lot of ways, you know, different types of credits. But for us, it's trying to get to that point of, you know, that 100% neutral. There's an entire other direction as well, well, not direction, you can build upon that and upon that, and you can start saying, what are the net zero targets? What are the things you can do? And that probably goes into even further detail.
No, thanks for sharing. I'm quite sure this is very, very informative for a lot of people. Coming back to Sendhil and just a related question with regards to climate change. I mean, you know, that's one of the biggest issue right now is climate change. Why is not everybody following your footsteps?
Yeah, why is everyone not following our footsteps? I think, look, you know, let's get real.
Yeah.
That the entire, we are reaching tipping point after tipping point that, you know, we've seen massive floods. My hometown in Australia, Brisbane, just went through massive floods. We're seeing massive heat waves. We've seen, you know, Texas freeze over. We've seen everything, you know, even in the last 3 or 4 years. And there's nothing that says it's not going to get, it's getting worse and worse. I mean, we've only got, you know, 10 years until 450 parts per million. So there's like, this is an emergency, yeah. Right? And I think and then if you look at transport and logistics being responsible for over 10% of all global carbon emissions, you know, it's important, it's absolutely imperative that we actually start to look at what we can do to reduce it. And then, but I'll make it even more real. The e-commerce industry is tightly coupled to the health of the economy, right? And the, you know, if this is a massive drag on the economy, you know, that by not having a solution to climate change, right? So in the long run, you know, the economy is built upon the society, which is built upon the environment. And so there's even more of an imperative, I think, for e-commerce and e-commerce logistics to basically do something. And it's absolutely, you know, if we can do it, right? If we can do it as a small startup that started in Australia and now it's gone global, you know, I actually do call on all of the big, you know, the really big global shippers. Why can't you do something as well?
Totally, totally agree with you. I mean, they should all do it. And maybe, you know, you should be kind of, I should really, whoever is going through, and I've spoken to a lot of people, that's kind of my job. I speak to people like you every single day. I have people who have literally told me that right now, you know, their VCs has been pushing them to make some money, reduce the bottom line. So they had to park the sustainability file on another table. And I'm like, I can't curse right now or else I would have, but you know, they literally park it aside and they think that, you know, it's more important for them to make profits than to look at that. Because what happens usually is that when you even take a 1 year break from sustainability, it's way, way much damage, especially when it comes to e-commerce, especially cross borders. Okay, so let me not get carried away.
I think it is. So the interesting thing is, and sometimes it's just about a short term, long term.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I actually think that, you know, in the long term, as I've just mentioned, you know, focusing on sustainability is absolutely the same as focusing on efficiency for an e-commerce, and often will actually unlock opportunities that you might not have otherwise seen, or find ways of doing that. And so I do agree that, you know, unfortunately, you know, we are moving, you know, the global economic climate has changed. It is forcing a lot of folk to go short term, but there is a big danger that you do that, you actually lose one, the long-term view and what you might be able to do to outcompete. Because, you know, while there be, you know, those things have trade-offs in the short term, they line up in the long term. But secondly, you lose credibility. That is definitely a, you know, something we're finding as well, that the whole world is becoming, you know, is going to be calling for this more and more. Like, if anyone thinks that sentiment is not going to be shifting further and further towards sustainability in the coming years, you just have to look at any chart of global average temperatures or any chart of biodiversity or habitat loss or any chart like that. And you'll see, you know, you can see what exponential curves look like, and you'll realize that the global sentiment is absolutely going in one direction, and that's towards the need for sustainability.
Do you mind sharing how much would, you know, falling offsetting looks like on the bottom line? Like, is it less than 10% or is it more than 10%?
Yeah, absolutely less than that. We believe. Again, it really depends what sort of business you're in. Right. We look at it in terms of GMV terms as well. Like, you know, it's of the actual amount, it's way less. And so, yeah, you know, that part of it's convincing, you know, imagine if the whole industry worked together and convinced all the retailers that this is the way it had to go, right? There's nothing there that doesn't say, you know, it would have in some ways very little, you know, well, or none, no impact, we believe, on sales, but it would have a huge impact on the environment.
So I'm assuming on the client base you have this individuals, I don't know how many individuals are still left And have you moved completely to B2B kind of services where you have this big corporates coming in or, you know, small scale business owners coming and sending their products? But what kind of success stories have you helped them, you know, now parking the carbon neutral or sustainability aside, but how are you actually helping them to grow? I mean, is it, you know, is there any tech involved where they get some clarity or is there any cost efficiency? Have you kind of created something which is out of the box for those small business owners sending their parcels within Australia or US?
Yeah, just to give you context, we're no longer a giving marketplace. No, we pivoted completely within about 3 or 4 months to becoming a small business courier. And to give you context, we just look back at 2021. We actually believe we were the most reliable delivery service in the US. In 2020, national delivery service, I should say, we maintained around 97% on-time delivery, which outperformed everyone else. We believe we're the most affordable, we're the most sustainable. But also, we've now sent a parcel from every single three-digit zip in America to every other three-digit zip in America. We've actually gone full. And so when you talk about the impact, you know, our typical customer sends somewhere between, you know, 1 and 100, maybe 200 parcels a month. Although we do have some customers that go up to, 1 to 200 parcels a day. Sorry, we do have some customers to go up to 1,000 parcels a day. But really, what's what we've built for? We've really built for the smaller end of town. And the competitive advantage that we give them is firstly, you know, there is a bit on price, but you know what? It's also about creating value. It's for helping them to use shipping as a way to give them competitive advantage. So we give them a fantastic customer support experience. We give them the, you know, tools where if something's going wrong, they can just press a button and they can launch a parcel investigation, right? We give them, and as well as a team that will be there to be on hand, we give them the ability to tailor their, you know, their tracking emails, like all this sort of stuff. So we think about it. One, we create competitive advantage for small business by reducing their cost, reducing the time spent that they need to do for shipping and giving them tools to help them build their business.
And are you very asset heavy or is it like very man hour? I don't know if that's a right word anymore to use, man hour, but is it like very labor intensive for you where, you know, you have a lot of people focusing on moving the parcels, working with the other companies, or do you have your own infrastructures?
No, we're very technology based. In fact, what we, you know, we might, to give you a sense, say I was sending you a parcel from Brisbane to Singapore, for example, we would have one provider actually pick up, but we'd actually then put into the hands of the second provider who would do the line haul, a third provider who would actually do the domestic line haul, then be the international line haul, and then it would actually get delivered at the end by probably a fourth. And we stitch all that together. From a customer perspective, you know, I don't need to know what's going on behind the scenes. In fact, that sort of thing happens all the time in logistics networks, as we all know. What we've done is we've actually done that for the first time, we believe, as a real small business carrier, minimums of one, and stitched together in one service, Sendal, with one place where you go for customer support or one place where you pay.
Amazing. I mean, so, I mean, it does look like your USP. I mean, one of the USP is, has to be cost because, you know, you spend a lot of time and efforts to work with multiple partners to make your job more difficult than me sending the product where it's just a few clicks for me. So,
yeah, we think of it as like a swan on the surface. It's very, very, in fact, the beautiful thing about being there just for small business is to try to make it as simple as we possibly can, right? We take every single step we can. We remove choice, interestingly enough, to make it simple. It's a story, a thing we learned from Uber in the early days, right? Uber, when it launched, you couldn't book a baby seat or you couldn't, like there was all this stuff. You just have one thing you could do, which is, you know, call a driver. Ours is one thing. You can send a parcel and we'll send a parcel from anyone to anyone, right? With a minimum of one, but we make it easy. But behind, below the surface, that, you know, that swan is pedaling away and paddling away and so on. We do lots and lots of stuff just to make sure that every parcel gets from A to B. And does it with, you know, in a way that, again, you know, reliable, affordable, you know, on time and sustainable.
Right now, I mean, with the situation, the economic situation is quite turbulent, I would say. And it's going to be like this, I would say, at least for a year more before things looks more optimistic. And when I say this, I meant private equity, VCs, big investors coming and investing more on companies. They're going to start saving their cash. You know, keeping that in mind, and I don't know if you have the same image in mind or not, but do you, first of all, do you see that? And if yes, what challenges, what's going to keep you awake at night now, where you basically have to keep running the business at the minimum growth or investing and growing or transforming drastically?
Yeah, we the phrase I heard is, you know, the entire capital markets are going from burners to earners. Yeah. I don't know if you heard that one. Like it's, yeah, and I think the
Give me cash back. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, well, it's and I think that's a couple of, you know, coupled with the fact that there are some headwinds around the economy, particularly in the US, but actually all you know, the global economy as well. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tough time. We as a business took a hard look and we made sure that we had sufficient cash, you know, to see through the, you know, we call that weathering the storm. And if you're a founder and you haven't taken that hard step to actually look at, you know, relook at, you know, the what the worst case could possibly be, and you know, what happens if the capital markets shut for a year or a year and a half, you're not doing your job. Same time, you know, we also see some, you know, there's sort of lemonade coming out of the lemons or whatever you might see. And it really is those businesses who can, you know, grow efficiently, those businesses who can manage their cash, you know, those businesses who can basically see this period through with sustainable business models. Well, you know what? There's not going to be many businesses who are getting created, right? Like over the next year and a half, or going to be able to scale and catch up with you, particularly at the other end. And so that's what we think about, is how to make sure that we've got that long-term view in mind. But at the same time, the short term, you know, really, you know, being prudent.
It's amazing how the region you have basically decided, US and Australia, they're quite different, the way they operate. The model is quite different. The culturally, how the e-commerce are operated or the ecosystem set up within the two countries are quite different as well. US might be quite advanced, but there are major struggles on how to reach people. So why these two locations? Why did the US come in mind? And have you gone pan-US right now, or are you doing just the region, one of the regions within US?
No, we could see, we do the entire US, as I mentioned. We've sent from every 3-digit zip in the US to every other 3-digit zip. So we, you know, why the US? Because we, interestingly, couldn't find folk doing what we're doing the way we're doing it anywhere in the world. But we decided that if we're going to actually start having global aspirations as a small Australian company, you might as well start at the, you know, the largest e-commerce market in the world. And if we could make it work in the US, we were pretty confident we could make it work anywhere. So yeah, that's why we chose the US. And it's been an amazing journey and experience for me personally, as well as the company, also because of the huge, you know, number of incredible people that are now part of our US team. And as I mentioned, we've actually, in that journey, we've become a US company. We're now a public benefit corporation in Delaware. So we're Australia's first technology B Corp. So we're a US company. Most of my team, my executive team, is now based in the US. We've sort of truly drunk the Kool-Aid, you might say.
For people who do not know why Delaware has almost no tax if you go and buy things. So if you're ever in US, want to do some shopping, go to Delaware. I'm in US, I know that. Now, talking more about talent, because that's one of my background. First of all, what are the skills required to be successful within Sandal?
So we've, from day one, actually, and this probably comes from, you know, some lessons in my previous time at, you know, the National Research Agency, in other words, is my co-founder Sean and I absolutely wanted to hire people with a set of, we thought more about culture than skills. And it's really, we look for what we call the five H's. So that is in order: humble, then honest, then happy, then hungry, then high performing. And the reason why it's in order is because we actually believe that those things cascade. So we think that humility creates honesty, right? Honesty creates positivity. Positivity creates curiosity and ambition. That creates performance. And in fact, as the flip side can happen, right? Humble, honest, happy, hungry, high performance, high performing. You can actually look at the negatives of those. Like, it's ego, we think, is the root of dishonesty. That's the root of negativity. You know, negativity is the root of disengagement. Disengagement is actually the thing that causes lack of performance. And so definitely the first and foremost thing that we do is we really, every single person we've ever hired into the business has been through the lens of the five H's. And in fact, it's interesting, our team themselves become the champion of the five H's, because we find that five H people really like to work with five H people. And in some ways, you know, what you're really saying is we love high performers, but we love people who are more humble and they're high performing. We love people who are hungry, but we love people who are more honest than they're hungry. So yeah, that's what makes Assembler. You know, in terms of the skills, well, we have skills in engineering, in network optimization, in customer support, in marketing, in sales. Like, we've got, you know, a whole gamut of skills, but really the thing that binds us together. And we have folk from so many backgrounds, it's in the number of languages we speak and so on. The thing that binds us together is the five H's.
Thanks for sharing. I absolutely love the five H's. I mean, that's amazing. Thanks for sharing. I think company following that culture, the leadership is themselves quite humble, and that's quite impressive. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. So I mean, again, for me, when I asked for skills, were basically soft skills. But I'm also assuming on the hard skills, you would be quite open to hire people who are not coming from supply chain itself, because you yourself are not from supply chain. Or have you changed your mindset that if I'm not the best person in supply chain, maybe I hire somebody who is from supply chain only?
Look, we have both. We like to joke, it took us like, I think, until 10 employees to get somebody who knew anything about logistics or e-commerce. To begin with, we were just sort of, in some ways, taking a very fresh pair of eyes to the problem, right? What we knew about was the problems of being a shipper, because we were running a marketplace that was, and I'd sent so many things by that stage that I was acutely aware of all the challenges that you might have as a small business shipper. So, but yeah, now we have specialists in lots of areas, including supply chain. But we also love it sometimes when you get somebody who does come in with a fresh pair of eyes as well.
Now, my next question, I've done lots and lots of podcasts by the way now, but I've never asked these questions before. And we're going to start doing this questioning from this podcast is about mental health. A lot of people do suffer from that, and a lot of people are now either are overworked or basically struggling due to what's happening at their workplace and economy. How do you keep your sanity? What's your way of personally burning out the stress, not getting super emotionally attached to what's happening at the work?
Yeah, look, it's absolutely, I'm glad you're actually asking these questions, because I think mental health is something that we should be all talking about a lot more, and we should be asked, really checking in with everyone and they're okay, to see if they're okay. So I think we say to our team, and I'm very firm believer of this, that if you're not right and then your family's not right, you can't bring your whole self to work. So the place where I go to recharge is, other than for myself, it's jogging, doing exercise. I love reading books, that's sort of place I go. There's a bit of exercise and reading. And then we have a very firm rule in the business as well, which is the family always comes first. In fact, I'm a big proponent. I make sure that, I'll go to school concerts, and I remember a team member once asked me, should I make those things private? I said, no, right? I want everyone to see that I'm going to a school concert, because I want everyone else to know that it's okay for them to look after their family first. We also lean very heavily into flexible workspace. Even before COVID, we had a lot of rules. We had remote employees, and we had a rule that if one person's on headphones, everyone's on headphones, right? Like, it only takes one person in a meeting. If you're trying to work remotely and everyone else is in a room, you're completely disadvantaged. So we had the rule, one person on headphones, everyone on headphones. So we brought out a whole lot of things. It's because, that allows you to have the flexibility to look after your family. But everyone, the period that we're going through, where there is going to be higher inflation, where there is more uncertainty. I mean, we've just come out of a year or 2 years of uncertainty. Yeah. That uncertainty, unfortunately, is still not going away. It is absolutely a period where we should be looking at mental health and what we can do to support each other.
Thank you for answering that. My second last question is, I don't want to take it too long, but I think this is important for a lot of people to learn from your mistakes, not even mistakes, just from not knowing what you know now. So, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently in 2014?
I think probably one of the biggest things that I've looked back on, and probably the founder lessons, it's definitely one around just appreciating the speed of time. Or prevention, the power of time, right? If you think about it, when you're in a small business, you don't have too many assets. You've got no assets, right? You've also got lack of time. All what you do have is the ability to move quickly. And I think if there's one thing that I've learned from my entire startup journey, starting with when we had to shut down a business that we love and move to a business that was really that we love now more, which I think is that does it was really tough. Is we still took too long to make some of those decisions. In fact, even now, time is the only non-renewable resource. Right. And I think one of the things that I keep on reflecting about is what can we do, to speed up without creating more stress, right? Speeding up does not mean, if you do that, compromising, mental health or putting everyone under stress, you're actually just creating a long-term problem for yourself. You're creating more debt. Yeah. It's actually not going to speed you up in the long term. But it is about, okay, how can we get more focused on the things that really matter? How can we make better decisions, right? Those are the things that can generally create more time. So if I could go back in time, it would be more like, be volume more, how can you make this decision quicker? Or what can you do to time box it? Or what can you do to make it better? How can you make sure that the whole team becomes more aligned around this particular direction so that we can get more focused? Those are the things that I look back and wish that I could have done better.
Last one. I mean, you know, basically, why don't you take this platform and, you know, reach out to, I mean, kind of talk to my audience directly about Sendil, and, you know, if there's any kind of support you need, or if there's any kind of particular customers. I'm quite sure many of my followers, I know for sure, are small product owners, because I did a podcast with Thrasio and I got so many messages from all these product owners saying, oh, I'm looking forward to kind of investors like this who can come and buy my product and make it successful on Amazon. They have challenges in logistics, so asking me for logistics companies. So maybe you should talk to them specifically, because I know for sure they're following this video.
Oh, look, I think for all of you out there who are the makers or the, you know, the small business people, you know, who have marketplaces, like there's a huge range. You know, generally anyone we look at that is basically in the world of e-commerce and you haven't yet made it to the, you know, the giant scale of a Walmart, that's what we're built for. We're really built for you. And our job, actually, funnily enough, is to help you become bigger. Like, we believe that we truly only succeed when you succeed. And so if you're looking for a shipping solution that's simple, reliable, and affordable, please give us a shot.
Awesome. The best way to reach is through Sendil.com. Is that the website?
Yeah, absolutely. Sendil.com.
Awesome. James is on LinkedIn as well, and he's quite active. I sent him an invitation like at 8:50, and he accepted at 8:52. So I know he's quite active. So, you know, bombard him and spam his LinkedIn.
I was going to say, if you really want, Rashid, if you're for listeners, I'll create a bit of an upgrade link.
Yes.
If you're interested in, we'll give them even better rates.
Yeah, let's do that. That would be amazing. Let's create a link and I'll post it. So, you know, it would be amazing. But again, man, you know, I really appreciate your time. I think, to be honest, I'm really loved what you're doing with the business. Your mindset around sustainability is just amazing. I'm super happy that we did that.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow Elcott Global/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the podcast platform. We are looking forward to your feedback. Thank you so much.